Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. David French of National Review is with us today. Jim Garrity is off. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, crazy, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And David, let's start with the good. This might be, as I just mentioned to David before we started here, the longest clip we've ever had in the history of the Three Martini Lunch. But given what we've heard and seen throughout this campaign season, the wisdom here is probably worth it. In fact, it's definitely worth it. And especially in contrast to the reaction to Tuesday's election that we were talking about yesterday with the riots and the protests and the blocked traffic and the violence and the burning that we saw in several American cities on Wednesday. So, David, here is Ernie Johnson. Those who know Ernie Johnson know he is a sports guy. He anchors NBA coverage on TNT on cable TV. And apparently last night, all the guys on the set, Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, and so forth, were talking about the election and their takeaways from it. And Ernie Johnson mentioned the fact that for the first time since he was eligible to vote more than 40 years ago now, he pushed the write-in button. He said he couldn't handle Hillary Clinton's trust issues. He couldn't handle Donald Trump's incendiary rhetoric. So he ultimately wrote in John Kasich knowing that he couldn't win, but said he had a clean conscience. But then going forward, he had this perspective.
I watched the video today at CNN on what was going on at the White House with Donald Trump, President Obama. I was hopeful and I was encouraged that there will be a difference between the President Trump and the campaigning Trump. And I'm with these guys. We have to give them a chance. But here's the deal. I just hope that he's all in fixing the wounds in this country and the divides that separate this country. And I want to be part of that, too. And for me to be part of it, I have to look in the mirror and I have to say, how am I going to be a better man? How am I going to be a better neighbor? How am I going to be a better citizen? How am I going to be a better American? How can I be a fountain and not a drain? And number three, I know you're not supposed to talk about politics and religion, but we're already talking about politics, and so I'm going to go the R direction, too. I never know from one election to the next who's going to be in the Oval Office, but I always know who's on the throne. And I'm on this earth because God created me, and that's who I answer to. I'm a Christian. I follow this guy named Jesus. You might have heard of him. And the greatest commandment he gave me was to love others. And Scripture also tells us to pray for our leaders. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray for Donald Trump. I'm going to pray for all those people right now who feel like they're on the outside looking in, who are afraid at this point. Pray for them, too. In short, I'm praying for America. And I'm praying that one day we're going to look back and we're going to say, you know what? That Donald Trump presidency, that was all right. But I'm praying.
Ernie Johnson on TNT Thursday night. And so, David, obviously he pointed to some divides and problems that are obviously complicated and are going to take quite a bit of effort. But his approach here, first of all, praying for our leaders and realizing that ultimately it's not the president who reigns supreme. This is a good lesson not only for Christians, for conservatives, but everyone after such an ugly and divisive and spiteful presidential campaign season.
Yeah, I mean, look, that was such a great statement that, you know, from an unlikely source. I mean, I love EJ. I love the NBA on TNT crowd, but I don't go to EJ, Shaq, Kenny, and Charles for political commentary. But that was so good. It made me question, what is it that I'm doing with my life? I'm supposed to be the one who's bringing the you know, that kind of tempered, measured commentary to the public sphere. He just blew anything I've said out of the water. I just the sincerity of it, the conviction of it, and then the clarity of it. I mean, look, I was never Trump. I have spoken about that and written about that, but I am 100% rooting for him to be a good president. I will applaud him where he does things that I believe are right. I'll criticize him where he does things that are wrong. But yeah, above all, I'm exactly in the EJ position. I'm praying for the man. And I really, really do hope that at the end of 4 years or 8 years, I look back and I say, wow, you know, I made a good faith effort to predict what he would be like when I was talking about him in 2015 and 2016. But man, was I wrong. And wow, and am I glad that I was wrong. And I really hope that that's where I end up.
On to the first crazy martini now. And David, we're less than, 72 hours? Certainly less than 96 hours since we knew who the next president of the United States would be. And since that time, a lot of people have pointed out, that's the end of the Clintons. Not even close. We're not even out of the week yet. And that presumption is already being challenged strongly. This is from the New York Post on Thursday. While some pundits are declaring the Clinton political dynasty dead, sources tell us that it is far from over. Chelsea Clinton is being groomed for the New York seat held by Congresswoman Nita Lowey. Chelsea could run for the seat in New York City's 17th Congressional District once Lowey, a respected 79-year-old career politician with nearly 30 years in office, decides to retire. Lowey's district includes parts of Rockland and Westchester counties and, conveniently, Chappaqua, the Clinton family home base. In August, Hillary and Bill Clinton purchased a home next door to their primary residence in Chappaqua for $1.16 million, which is intended for Chelsea, her husband Mark Mezvinsky, and their two children, Charlotte and Aiden. While Chelsea currently lives and is registered to vote in Manhattan, she could easily make Chappaqua her legal residence in order to run for Lowey's seat when it becomes vacant. A source told us, quote, "While it is true the Clintons need some time to regroup after Hillary's crushing loss, they will not give up. Chelsea would be the next extension of the Clinton brand. In the past few years, she has taken a very visible role in the Clinton Foundation and on the campaign trail." So no comment from Chelsea, no comment from Congresswoman Lowey. But David, if you thought it was that easy to get rid of the Clintons, apparently we're wrong.
Yeah, this is crazy, but it's a kind of, from a GOP perspective, it's a good kind of crazy. Because I thought that the Democrats would pretty much universally learn the lesson that the, quote, Clinton brand has become incredibly toxic. Yes, Bill won election in 92. He won re-election in 96. But since then, the Clinton brand has arguably cost the Democrats two other presidential elections in 2000. Does anyone think Al Gore would have lost if Clinton had presided over an economic boom and had not been impeached and was a man of integrity? Gore would probably win that. In 2016, Hillary Clinton was uniquely suited to lose to Donald Trump. So yeah, if the Democrats, or at least some Democrats, want to go right back to that well, more power to them. But that's crazy.
It is crazy. And poor Nita Lowey. If you remember back in 2000, she was going to run for the seat being vacated by Senator Moynihan's retirement, and the Clintons just kicked her in the shins and elbowed her out of the race. So she kept running for her House seat, where she still is. And now they're basically, it sounds like, trying to elbow out the door altogether into retirement, so Chelsea's got an open seat to run for.
If I'm Nita Lowey, don't I have grandchildren maybe that could do it? I mean, if it's a dynasty thing, why does she have to stand aside and let the Clintons continue to reign in Democratic politics? It makes no sense at all, but it shows how much and frankly how thin the Democratic bench is becoming after they've lost collectively around the country almost 1,000 seats in the House, Senate, and various state legislatures.
David, as you know, there are a number of issues that grind Jim Garrity's gears, but the press's adoration of Chelsea Clinton and still treating her like she's 14 when she's in her mid to late 30s now is one of the things that really gets his goat. If she becomes a politician, do you think the media changes at all?
Well, in her defense, I mean, in this millennial generation, we often treat people in the late 20s and early 30s like they're still 14. So that's not that uncommon. Eventually, you know, look, I think that one of the good things from the election is that the Clinton mystique is gone. It's over. You know, we saw a staffer in the DNC was shouting at Donna Brazile in the aftermath of the loss. I think this little Clinton boomlet here is the product of, you know, the last remnants of Clinton loyalists that are deeply in the DNA of the Democratic Party. But the Clinton way is not the way of the future, or at least to every rational person. But who knows? Maybe we can switch titles and start calling the Democratic Party the stupid party instead of the Republican Party.
All right, on to the second crazy martini now. And this might also be good crazy, depending on your perspective. David, as we talked about yesterday, the Democrats suddenly love different provisions of the Constitution they didn't have much use for over the past 8 years, like separation of powers and federalism and free speech as dissent rather than somehow hidden racism and so forth. now we think of secession, apparently, in a different way. A lot of people in Texas were roundly scorned for suggesting that they might start a secession movement not that long ago. Now two West Coast states have decided that the recent presidential elections are the final straw for them. This is from ClevelandLive.com. Two Oregon residents hope to put an issue on the 2018 ballot proposing the state secede from the union in response to the election of Donald Trump as president. Quote, Oregonian values are no longer the values held by the rest of the United States, Christian Trayball, a writer, tells OregonLive.com. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness plus equality. Trayball and lawyer Jennifer Rollins filed the Oregon Secession Act on Thursday. Trayball tells OregonLive.com Tuesday's election results obviously played a big role in the proposal, but he also said it's been developing over time. Oregon is not alone with secession movements. In California, the grassroots group Yes California, which has about 3,000 members, has been pushing for the state to break from the union for years. Yes California spokesman Marcus Ruiz tells the New York Times, quote, we hit it big with Trump being elected. The hashtag CalExit has become popular on Twitter. The article goes on to point out that it's pretty hard to secede. You actually need two-thirds of approval from the House and Senate and approval from at least 38 state legislatures. In other words, it's just as hard to secede as it is to pass a constitutional amendment. So, David, apparently secession is cool now.
Well, yeah, I've seen CalExit on Twitter. I've seen Wexit on Twitter, which is Oregon, Washington, and California. You know, it's amazing. If you look at all of the things that the Democrats said would happen if Trump lost, rioting, beatings, secession talk, all of that is happening from their side right now. It is truly crazy, but it's crazy. I say the Clinton thing was kind of good crazy. I think this is bad crazy in this sense. Look, we have an extremely polarized nation, extremely polarized. And it is, to me, quite telling that these individuals would look at, quote, Trump country and say, I don't want any part of being in a nation with those people. Now, they're talking about, like, my community. my town went 69% for Trump. My precinct went 72% for Trump. This is a great place to live. It's a great place to raise kids. They would find it to be a great place if they ever came here, but they're so polarized that they don't want any part of this. That is remarkable. And the fact that people are talking about it, I think, is a demonstration of how polarized we're becoming. And look, this talk is crazy now, but what happens if there's a Trump reelect? What happens if there's an awful lot, a lot of these social trends that are dividing us keep going in the same direction that they're going? What's crazy today might actually be more realistic or more concerning tomorrow.
Yeah, we've seen a few other issues get from crazy to serious in a pretty big hurry over recent years. So you never know. So I guess the takeaway here is that the Cal exit and the Oregon exit people probably need to listen to Ernie Johnson.
Exactly. Exactly. And for that matter, you know, Shaq, Kenny, and Charles, all of them. I love those guys. One of my favorite shows on television. Each one of them, they're liberal. EJ is conservative. They were all saying, give Donald Trump a chance. There's a lot of responsible liberal voices out there right now saying, look, he's the president. You got to give him a chance. They need to be listening to some folks on their own side who are saying, hey, let's remember the Constitution. Let's support the president to the same extent that we asked Republicans to support Barack Obama.
David, very well stated, and we should also point out that we wish all of our veterans a very happy Veterans Day today. And David, that includes you, a veteran of the Iraq War, recipient of a Bronze Star. This is not part of the schedule that we set up before today's podcast, but when you think of today and the folks you served with, what comes to mind today?
Well, two things. Number one, serving my country in uniform is the greatest privilege of my life. I mean, I don't regret one second of it, and I'm so thankful that I had the opportunity to serve. Number two, I think about the guys that I served with. I served with heroes. I mean, I admire those guys. It was the great honor of my life to be able to be a small part of helping accomplish the mission and serving alongside of them. And frankly, on Veterans Day, I miss them. You know, we were closer than brothers during a year in Iraq, and on Veterans Day, you know, we're all scattered all across the country. And you know, I just say it bluntly, I miss my brothers.
Well, David, thank you to you for your service. Thank you to all of them and all of our listeners who are veterans and everyone who has ever worn the uniform of this country. David, an honor to be with you, especially today, but thank you for the past 2 days filling in for Jim.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
David French of National Review and for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and tune in again Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.